They stayed that way long enough for me to wonder, should Rosaline and I leave the room? But finally they unwound themselves, and we all sat with the smell of banana cream pie. June said, "Do you think it was really her time to die?" "I don't know," said August. "Maybe it was. But one thing May was right about is that it's our time to live. It's her dying wish that we do that, June. So we need to see to it, all right?" "What do you mean?" said June. We watched August walk over to the window, put her hands on the countertop, and gaze out at the sky. It was aquamarine and shiny as taffeta. You had the feeling she was making a big decision. June pulled out a chair and sat down. "August, what?" When August turned back, her jaw was set. "I'm going to say something to you, June." She walked over and stood in front of her. "You've been halfway living your life for too long. May was saying that when it's time to die, go ahead and die. And when it's time to live, live. Don't sort of maybe live, but live like you're going all out, like you're not afraid." "I don't know what you're talking about," June said. "I'm saying, marry Neil." "What?" "Ever since Melvin Edwards backed out of your wedding all those years back, you've been afraid of love, refusing to take a chance. Like May said, it's your time to live. Don't mess it up." June's mouth sat open in a wide circle, and not a word crossed her lips. Suddenly the air was coated with the smell of burning. Rosaline flung open the oven and yanked out the pie to find every last meringue tip scorched. "We'll eat it like that," said August. "A little burned taste never hurt anybody." Every day for 4 days straight, we kept the vigil. August had May's note with her at all times, tucked in her pocket or slipped under her belt if she had on a no-pocket dress. I watched June, how she seemed quieter since August had lowered the boom on her about Neil. Not exactly sulking. Contemplating is more like it. I would catch her sitting beside the coffin, leaning her forehead against it, and you could tell she was doing more than saying goodbye to May. She was trying to find her own answers to things. One afternoon, August and Zack and I went out to the hives and took off the black cloths. August said we couldn't leave them on too long, since the bees had memorized everything about their hive, and a change like that could make them disoriented. They might not find their way home again, she said. "Tell me about it," I thought. The Daughters of Mary showed up each day just before lunch and sat in the parlor with May through the afternoon, telling stories about her. We cried a good bit also, but I could tell we were starting to feel better about saying goodbye. I only hoped May was feeling all right about it, too. Neil stayed at the house nearly as much as the daughters and seemed downright confused by the way June stared into his face. She could barely play the cello because it meant turning loose of his hand. To tell the truth, the rest of us spent nearly as much time watching June and Neil as we did seeing May into the next life. On the afternoon that the funeral home came to pick up May for the burial, bees buzzed around the front window screens. As the coffin was loaded into the hearse, bee hum swelled and blended into the late afternoon colors. Yellow gold, red, tinges of brown. I could still hear them humming at the graveside, even though we were miles away in a colored cemetery with crumbled markers and weeds. The sound carried on the breezes while we huddled together and watched them lower May's coffin into the ground. August passed around a paper bag full of manna, and we scooped up handfuls and threw the seeds into the hole with the coffin, and my ears filled with nothing but bee hum. That night, in my bed in the honey house, when I closed my eyes, bee hum ran through my body, ran through the whole earth. It was the oldest sound there was. Souls flying away. It takes honeybee workers 10 million foraging trips to gather enough nectar to make 1 pound of honey. Bees of the World.